It's the weekend, which means it's time for Jill on Money, the show that makes money fun and just happens to answer all your financial questions. Here's your host, Jill Schlesinger.
All righty, it's hour number two of Jill on Money, and we are delighted that you are joining us today. I have a treat for you. Anyone who's been listening to the show for a long time has heard our friend John Alzheimer, credit expert, on the program, but every so often we bring him back on just to give you some of your basic tips about credit, but also to keep us up to date in the ever-changing credit reporting, credit scoring landscape. John Alzheimer, let me do your bio because you know I love to do it. Besides having an incredibly charming Southern accent, is a nationally recognized expert on credit reporting, credit scoring, and identity theft. President of the Alzheimer Group, you may have seen him on TV. He's been all over the place. Formerly of FICO, Equifax, and Credit.com, he's the only recognized credit expert who actually comes from the credit industry. He's been a credit expert witness in a whole slew of lawsuits. He's been qualified to testify in federal and state court on the topic of consumer credit. John, welcome back to Jill on Money. I have a bone to pick with you, mister.
Well, pick it.
Well, I mean, it just says you've been quoted and published in all these different publications, and you've appeared numerous times. You seem to mention Oprah, and yet you don't mention Jill on Money.
I do need to mention Jill on Money. That's my bad, and I will
correct
that.
Right? Uh-huh.
Millions of apologies.
Okay, that's all right. That's all I got for you now. John, here we are, middle of 2017. Give us a little update on anything new going on in the credit reporting and scoring industries, because there were a bunch of rules that were sort of in motion. Where do we stand right now? What's going on?
Well, there's four letters that you need to become infinitely familiar with, as do your listeners, and that's NCAP or NCAP. NCAP is the acronym for the National Consumer Assistance Plan, and it's a very big deal for millions of consumers because NCAP is essentially an agreement, or essentially what the credit reporting agencies are going to do because of an agreement, not only with the Attorney General from the state of New York, but also with the Attorneys General of 31 other states. And so the big change under NCAP that's coming right around the corner, beginning of July, is that the credit reporting agencies are going to be proactively removing almost 98% of judgments and about 50% of tax liens from consumer credit reports. And so this is it's not every day that something big happens in the world of credit reporting. This is a monumental change that the reporting agencies are doing proactively, and consumers are going to wake up essentially with an early Christmas present because their scores are going to go up and this derogatory information is going to be removed.
Why did this actually come to pass? I mean, you mentioned that there was a lawsuit that was brought by the New York Attorney General and the other attorneys general joined it. But what was the beef that consumers had around what the agencies were doing with this information?
Well, what normally is the criticism of the reporting agencies, sometimes warranted, sometimes not warranted, is usually around data accuracy. So the credit report is just so darn important. You can't turn your back on it, and you can't just assume that the information is correct. And because if it's incorrect, there are so many bad things that can happen to you, from not getting a job, to not getting a loan, to getting higher interest rates on loans, to getting higher premiums on insurance. And so it's so influential that having it correct is really important. And so the issue that the NCAP is attempting to address is this issue of data accuracy. And so a lot of the public records that are on consumer credit reports are accurate. However, many of them don't have what's referred to as a full PII, personal identification information set. So in other words, name, address, or name, address, and date of birth, or name, address, and date of birth, or social. You have to have all of those things in order to be able to correctly attribute a public record to the correct consumer's credit report. And so the reason the reporting agencies are going to be removing all this information is because that a large percentage of them don't have all of that information. And so there is a chance that the credit reporting agencies could be misapplying these tax liens and judgments to an incorrect consumer's credit report. So that's what they're attempting to correct.
So this personally identifiable information, right?
That's right.
Is this something that was fairly close to being? In other words, how pervasive were the errors if you had one piece of information but not another? Was it generally actually correct and we're just being nitpicky? I'm just wondering.
Yes. I can't say it any better than how you just said it. To assume that all of these millions of tax liens and judgments were on incorrect credit reports is simply not true. We're being a little bit picky, a little bit careful here, so we're really erring on the side of the consumer. And so instead of waiting for something bad to happen, the reporting agencies are eliminating the possibility of something bad from happening by removing this information on their own accord, essentially. Normally, in order for the reporting agencies to do something like this, an amendment to the Fair Credit Reporting Act has to take place, and so they do it because the law says they have to do it. This is something that they agreed to do as part of the settlement with all these state ASG. So, you know, this is something that if you have a judgment or a tax lien on your credit report, you're going to want to pull your credit reports in mid-July, and verify if you're one of the lucky few who are now, this information has been removed. And that's fantastic. The thing to keep in mind, however, is just because it's not on a credit report doesn't mean that it doesn't exist any longer. If you have a judgment against you or if you have a tax lien filed against you, you still have that issue to deal with. However, it's just not going to be showing up on a credit report.
And I guess I'm wondering, I am misconsumer friendly, but I'm also wondering that in effort to kind of err on the side of being more conservative, as you said, just to, you know, make sure that we don't have errors out there, are we sort of in creating inflated credit scores that would lead people to get loans that maybe they can't pay back? Are we going back to the bad old days? I guess that's a big question.
That's a very fair question, and I think you're right. Just because you don't have something bad on a credit report doesn't mean that you're a great credit risk. It just means that the information is missing, and so there's no way for a scoring system to consider it and evaluate it when calculating your score. Look, this is not something that has flown under the radar in the world of the lender. Lenders know this is happening, and they want to still be able to get their hands on a full, meaty set of information about their applicants, which is going to include things like public record information. And so in the worst case scenario, Jill, what's going to happen is here's a consumer who has judgments and or tax liens on his or her credit reports. On July 2nd, they're all gone. The scores go up, and they go up considerably, and now someone goes out and gets a loan that, A, maybe they weren't deserving of, and B, it's not priced properly because the lender believes they're actually a better credit risk than they are. That's not a good thing for lenders. It may seem like it's a great thing for consumers, but in the grand scheme of things, that's not necessarily a good thing for lenders.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. When we come back with John Alzheimer, superstar credit man extraordinaire, we're going to talk about some of the new variables that some of the credit reporting companies and one scoring company is what some of these new variables are in helping to determine whether or not someone is or is not a good credit risk. We're also going to make sure we go through some identity theft stuff with him because that's always fun. John Alzheimer is joining us here at the Jill on Money Show. If you've got a financial question, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger. Want to get in touch? Call or email any day, anytime. 855-411-JILL or ask Jill at jillonmoney.com.
You're back with Jill on Money. This is the program that takes the mystery out of your financial life. And what mysterious aspect to our financial lives is the idea of credit scores and how they became so incredibly important in determining the cost of our borrowing, but also how they've become ubiquitous in so many different aspects of our lives. We've got a credit expert, John Alzheimer, nationally recognized expert on credit reporting, who's back joining us again. Hi, John.
Hey, Jill.
So, by the way, during the break, I went and I typed into my browser NCAP for the National Consumer Assistance Plan, and in fact, what I got was the new car assessment program. So we need to get that higher up on the Google search, okay?
That's fantastic. Yeah, okay. Thank you for finding that for me.
All right,
I was looking for that other alternative website.
Yes, I thought you would like that. So, John, can you explain, there was quite a flurry of activity around VantageScore, I think using some different ways to determine their own scoring product. What is that, and do we care about Vantage versus FICO, and what's going on with how our scores are actually, or what's going into the scores that are generated by these companies?
Well, here's the analogy that I normally give people when they say, should we care about VantageScore? Remember about 20 years ago when people were talking about Mac, and everyone was saying, no, PC, who cares about Mac? I think those folks are probably rueing the day that they ever made that statement. So you absolutely have to put VantageScore under radar, primarily because they are in the second position as it pertains to volume of scores being used in the lending community. FICO is still the king. No one disputes that. But VantageScore is in the second position, which is not a bad place to be in the world of credit scoring. So you do have to be cognizant and knowledgeable about that score, or you're simply, you know, sticking your head in the sand. What VantageScore is essentially a credit scoring brand, just like FICO is a credit scoring brand. They're on their fourth generation of their scoring system, which is coming out later in the fall of 2017. And normally a new credit score is, you know, not that big of a deal. This is a big deal. And the reason it's a big deal is because for the first time ever, a credit bureau score is going to be considering what's referred to as trended data. And trended data is essentially a chronology of your prior 24 months of payments on your credit card accounts. And so now, instead of just considering what your balance is as of the date that your credit report is pulled, which is basically today, now the scoring system is going to be considering what your balance was for the prior 24 statements. And that's a big deal, because now the score will be able to consider the trajectory of your credit card usage. Are you always maxing out your card? Are you never maxing out your card? Are your balances going up? Are they going down? And so now, really, there are no more secrets as it pertains to your historical credit card use. And in the past, when someone said, well, what's your advice when you're about to go apply for a loan, I would always tell you, pay off your credit cards as much as you possibly can, because your scores are going to go up. That's still going to be true. However, now there's no hiding the fact that you did have a recently heavily leveraged credit card, which can be problematic in your score, and that's what lenders are asking for. They want to see more than just your kind of flat credit report when a score is being calculated. They want to see the depth of information being considered, and that's what VantageScore 4 is doing.
And so do you think that because VantageScore is, you know, again, as you said, not the number one, but they are a big enough brand, do you think that that could impact FICO as well?
Well, I think it has to. And, you know, 8 billion VantageScores were calculated last year. That's billion with a B. So it's not an immaterial volume of scores that are being used. But what's really important, and what's really the story here, is the value of this trended data. It's not a secret that it's extremely predictive. In fact, TransUnion published a study a few years ago essentially finding that people who did not pay their credit cards off in full every month were 3 to 5 times riskier as people who did. That's a big deal. And so now it makes perfect sense for the scoring brands, the FICOs and the VantageScores of the world, to study the value of this information in their scores. And so it wouldn't surprise me if the next generation of the FICO score, which we don't know what it's going to be called and we don't know when it's going to come out yet, if it doesn't at the very least consider the use of this trended information, because it is so darn valuable.
So when I look at the FICO website I go click on to what's in your credit score, it's still like the exact same thing that you basically taught me years ago. It sort of looks like where we were 10 years ago, that it's payment history and the amounts owed and new credit and length of credit history and credit mix. Like, there's nothing changed in the FICO score in the last 10 years?
Not real. And that, you know, that underscores the importance of that information. It doesn't really change over time. And it's also not a secret. I think everyone knows that things like payment history and how you manage your debt and how old your credit reports are and the diversity of your accounts and whether you're out there shopping for credit, those are the things that have been predictive of risk for decades, and they really haven't taken a backseat to anything else. This trended data information is going to fall very neatly within kind of the debt management category for both the scoring systems that FICO and VantageScore build. So even though trended data is a new attribute, if you will, it still falls neatly into one of those areas on that, on those pie charts.
So let me ask you a question about, like, average credit scores. I imagine that after a recession occurs and you have a financial crisis and everyone, like, unloads debt and all that, you know, everyone sees, oh, my gosh, my credit score sinks, right? But then as some of this bad information starts peeling off your credit report, your score starts to improve. So is it the case that credit scores are trending higher right now because of that, because bad stuff is falling off?
Absolutely. That is absolutely true. And not only because the bad stuff is falling off, but also because the bad stuff is getting older and older. If you did nothing other than allow time to pass, your credit scores would improve organically simply because the negative information is getting older. And the law, the Fair Credit Reporting Act, dictates that this information can only stay on for a set period of time. And normally it's 7 years. There are some exceptions. Chapter 7 bankruptcies can stay on for 10 years, for example. But if you think about when the meltdown occurred, which is kind of a late 07, 08 time frame, well, guess what? We're well past 7 years, and we're about to hit 10 years. And so all of the bad things that were happening to people, like foreclosures and repossessions and collections and bankruptcies, this information is now either very, very old or gone. And that means that your credit scores have been improving and now have essentially fully recovered from the bad things that happened to you in the wake of the recession.
And so the average score, is it about 700? Is that right? I thought I read that somewhere.
Yeah, and the average score tends to be one of those slightly moving targets depending on who you want to believe at any time. But it tends to be in the neighborhood of 700. And 700, in a lender's eyes, is actually a pretty darn good score, which tells you that most people in this country actually pay their bills and they have pretty good credit. But yeah, that average score, it's really hard to move it. It's almost like moving your GPA your fourth year in college because you have so many hours under your belt. It's just really hard to move your GPA one way or the other. That's the same as it goes for the average credit score. You have hundreds of millions of people who actually have a score, and so it's hard to move that average. But around 700 is kind of the general consensus is where it's at.
That's pretty good, I think.
It's very good.
Yeah, we're talking to John Olsheimer, nationally recognized expert on credit reporting, credit scoring. And when we come back with John, we're going to get into one of his favorite things, where his topic of scaring the living daylights out of us. So he'll talk a little bit about identity theft and what's going on. You know, you're worrying about Russians hacking into our elections. Maybe you should be worrying about how you can actually change your password on an ongoing basis and protect yourself, because you're probably not going to be able to stop that whole Russian thing yourself. But you can do things in your own life to take care of your data, to be sure to be extraordinarily careful about how you are shopping when you're shopping online, whether you're using your mobile phone. But again, this is the next segment is going to be John scaring me, because he likes to do that. So when we return with John Olsheimer, more on identity theft, credit reporting, credit scoring. You're listening to Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com, and we will be right back.
Have a question? Call anytime, 24-7, 855-411-JILL. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger.
You're back with Jill on Money. This is the program that takes the mystery out of your financial life. And there is no greater mystery than how we can protect our identity. And that's why we brought in our friend John Olsheimer, nationally recognized expert on credit reporting, credit scoring, and identity theft. Hey, John, where can people find you right now? Because you have like 5,000 different places where you contribute. What's the best place for them to read all about the great information that you provide?
So I publish all of my articles on not only Twitter, but also Facebook. And I'm like, I'm actually a beginner when it comes to social media, but it's at John Olsheimer, and at Oldtimer John, if you're a Twitter or a Facebook person. If you want to actually go to the various websites that publish the work, then you can find them at Magnify Money or The Simple Dollar. That's where I'm being published these days.
Boy, you get around, baby.
I do get around. And that's actually a good thing in my world.
Yeah, I bet. You can't get like locked into one versus another.
No.
Okay, so now we start to talk. We've talked about changes for consumers, the National Consumer Assistance Plan, the NCAP, which is beginning next month. So we're going to get some nasty stuff removed from credit records, and that's going to ensure data accuracy. That's good. We've talked about changes in the scoring at VantageScore and how that might actually give the lenders a better idea of kind of the way that you've been paying down your credit and running up your credit card bills. Now let's move into the part where you scare me about identity theft, because every time I talk to you, I come off the air and I say, oh my God, I'm doomed. And are we doomed, John? Will someone hack into our own stuff? Forget about Russians and elections. What do we need to worry about?
I think that the worry is a little bit inflated. And I think that's partially so people can sell you products and services to supposedly protect you. Mm. But I think here's the reality. The reality is that your personal information, name, address, social date of birth, credit card numbers, are so, quote-unquote, out there already. Think of all the websites where you have voluntarily given your personal and payment information. Frequent flyer clubs, different websites that were, for example, like where you rent your cars if you're a traveler, if you pay your bills online. And there are so many places where your information is already out there. There's not much you can do to protect it. In fact, it's not incumbent upon you for your bank to have a solid kind of cyber hacking plan in place. That's their problem, not necessarily your problem, but it becomes your problem when they get hacked. So I always try to tell people that there's really not a whole lot you can do to prevent that type of thing from happening. And it seems like every time you fire up your browser or flip on the television, there's some story or somebody talking about the latest big data breach. And it happens with universities. It happens with large companies. It happens with government agencies. It happens with email plans. I mean, how many times has Gmail been nailed? So I think that you should stop freaking out about it on an ongoing basis and just make sure that you do the important things, like check your credit reports at least once a month, not once a year. That's silly. That's like looking at your credit card statements once a year.
Listen, we can't even get them to do it once a year.
Yeah. Oh, it's extremely frustrating.
All right.
It's just way too important to check things once a year or never check them at all and then complain about the fact that the information's wrong. The reporting agencies don't have any obligation to correct your credit reports unless you tell them something is incorrect. They don't know that something is incorrect until you raise your hand and say, hey, this is incorrect. Please correct it. So instead of paying a bunch of money for these monthly subscriptions to supposedly kind of keep your, you know, information secure, I always tell people if you really truly are worried about becoming the victim of fraud, then ground zero is your credit reports, because that's what they're after, the ability to buy things on your dime. And I always tell them, place a security freeze on your credit reports. In Georgia, where I live, it's $3 flat fee per credit bureau. That's $9 total to essentially take my credit reports out of circulation until I want to put them back into circulation. That's the best bang for the buck ever when it comes to protecting your identity from a thief.
That's interesting. People feel what? They get anxious about that because they don't want this to be closed, or do they not understand that there's really no downside to it?
Yeah, I think that it's been positioned as more of a headache than a value. And the headache position is this, is that if your credit reports are frozen and you go out and you apply for something, then, oh my gosh, you have to take this extra step of unfreezing them or putting them back in circulation, which, by the way, can be done online through an account you set up with the reporting agencies. It takes about 10 minutes. It's not a big deal. But the downside of not doing it is, you know, someone can go out there and apply for credit in your name, and your credit report can be delivered. Now you have an inquiry on a credit report that doesn't belong to you, and maybe there's a new loan or a new card that's been issued in your name that you're now going to have to deal with on the back end. And it's not like you're going to have a bunch of financial liability, but believe it or not, there are federal laws that protect you from that type of fraud as well. It's just the headache of having to deal with it and argue with people that it's not your account, that you want it off your credit report. So I always tell people that if you're not a really credit active person, then go ahead and freeze your credit reports. And this is especially great for people who are elderly and have exited the credit environment because they just don't have a need to go out and apply for credit any longer, but they're still targets of fraudsters. I always tell them, look, freeze your credit reports, and you never have to worry about somebody applying for credit and actually having it approved in your name ever again.
That's kind of great. Because, you know, I think people hear freeze credit and they think like, oh, my God, I can't use my credit card. That's what I think it's misinformation more than anything else, that people hear frozen credit and they think, oh, I can't do anything. But that's not the case. It's just if you're applying for new credit. And by the way, maybe it should be maybe we need to do like a behavioral finance kind of approach to this, which is maybe we should automatically opt in for everyone's credit being frozen. And then you have to actually unfreeze it if you want to use credit or apply for credit, because that might actually keep a step ahead of your emotional desire to open up yet another dopey Victoria's Secret charge card account or whatever else you're doing that's hurting you down the line. So I don't know. Could be. All right. When we come back with John Alzheimer, our nationally recognized expert on credit reporting, credit scoring, and identity theft, I do want to talk a little bit about how you deal with identity theft once it's actually happened to you. What are the steps that you do that you should be taking? Do you need to hire a monitoring service? What should we do, John Alzheimer? It's Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
It doesn't matter if you're 25 or 65, Jill Schlesinger is here to help you. Back to Jill on Money.
You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a holler, 855-411-JILL. Our email address is askjill@jillonmoney.com. All right, we are live with our pal, John Alzheimer, nationally recognized expert on credit reporting, credit scoring, and identity theft. If you want to follow John, just do @JohnAlzheimer. He has all his stuff. He writes great stuff at The Simple Dollar and Magnified Money. He's been on every single show out there that's financially related. So, John, let's say that you find out, not just there's an error on my credit report, but someone got my stuff. What's your first line of action? What do you do first?
Yeah, so first thing is don't panic, because welcome to the club. I don't think anybody can honestly say that they've never had, for example, their credit card compromised and had to deal with fraudulent charges. So step one is don't freak out. And the reason you don't freak out is because of something called the Fair Credit Billing Act, or the FCBA. The Fair Credit Billing Act is a federal law that limits your liability for credit card fraud to $50, no more than 50 bucks. And on top of that, the credit card networks, in other words, the Amex, the Discover, the MasterCard, and the Visas, the four major networks, have zero liability policies, which means that unless you completely ignore the fact that you've been the victim of, for example, credit card theft, you're not going to pay one red cent out of your pocket because you don't have any liability. So don't freak out. But you are going to want to take some steps to make sure that you contact the creditor, let them know this is fraudulent, I did not open this account. They're going to ask you to fill out some forms, which makes perfect sense because they want to separate the real victims from the pretenders who just don't want to pay their actual bills. You're likely going to have to either verbally or sign something that where you agree that you did not benefit from the charges in any way, meaning that it's not yours or that it's not something that you're getting a benefit from, meaning that you know the fraudster. And essentially what will happen then is they'll close the account, they'll wipe it out, they will take it off your credit report if it has been reported, and you can move on with your life. Now, because you have been the victim of fraud in that case, the security freeze that we've spoken about is now going to be free, because in every state, if you have been a verified victim of identity theft or fraud, then the reporting agencies have to give you those security freezes at no cost. So it's going to save you a little bit of money, even though you had to go through the headache of dealing with the fact that you've been a victim. But you really have no liability. The only thing you're going to have to go through is a little bit of legwork, which I absolutely agree is a pain in the butt, but at the very least, you know it's not going to cost you anything.
And John, if you have had your identity stolen, I thought that there was some notion, maybe I read this like on a government website, that you should be reporting it to the police. Is that still the case?
Yeah, you may be asked to fill out or provide a police report in order to get certain items removed from your credit reports. Again, remember, Jill, one of the very common ways that people try to get valid information off of their credit reports is essentially to lie to the credit reporting agencies and say, oh, no, I've been the victim of fraud. None of that stuff is mine, when it actually really is. And so the way that you separate the real victims from the people who are not victims is you ask them to take that one further step, which is to fill out a police report. Look, filling out a fraudulent police report is a crime. And so if you're actually willing to go to that extent to get something off of your credit report to commit a crime, then that, I think that kind of says something about you. And so, yes, you may actually be requested to go and fill out a police report and provide a copy of that report to the reporting agencies before they will start removing and blocking this fraudulent information from your credit reports.
Oh my God, it's just so daunting. We got 3 minutes left. Give us the three top ways that you can help protect your identity.
Well, number one, because most of the time, what the thief is after is the ability to engage in commerce on your dime. Yes, there are exceptions to that rule. However, that is the primary goal of a fraudster, is to get something of value and not have to pay for it and leave you with the mess. And the normal way that they are going to do that is they're going to either steal existing payment information from you. That's called account takeover. Or they're going to apply for something new in your name, and that's called true name fraud. In both scenarios, there is going to be evidence of that on your credit reports. If you don't check your credit reports, the first time you're going to learn that you've been the victim of fraud is when a creditor contacts you about paying a bill that you never applied for. That's going to be your introduction to the fact that you've been the victim of fraud. That's not when you want to find out about it, because that means that the fraud is at least 60 to 90 days old, and who knows what else has happened in that interim that you're going to have to clean up. And so if I've said it once, I've said it a million times, you have the right to get copies of all of your credit reports once every 12 months for free at annualcreditreport.com. Or if you want it more than that, if you're more a voracious consumer of your credit reports, which I am, there are a variety of websites where you can get additional copies of your credit reports for free. And free, I'm using actual Webster's definition of the word free, which means you don't have to pay for anything. You don't have to give a credit card number. It actually is using the strict definition of the word. Become more engaged with your credit reports. It's going to save you headache, and it might save you money, and it might save you having to deal with collection agencies who are trying to collect debts that you never incurred.
All right. John Alzheimer, nationally recognized expert on credit reporting, credit scoring, and identity theft. Thank you so much for joining us. Follow John on Twitter, and Mark will put a link to everything in the show notes. He's the best. You're listening to Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back. Give it all away if you give me one last try. Will it happily ever try? You're back with Jill on Money. And once again, I want to thank John Alzheimer for joining us. He's so great, so smart. Think about what he said. I mean, a lot of this is common sense, but I love the idea of just the only thing you really need to worry about is checking your credit report. Annualcreditreport.com. That's where you get a freebie once a year. All right? And just remember, no panicking if something happened. Consider freezing your credit. All these things are great, reasonable ways to manage your situation when it comes to credit reporting and credit scores. All right, I got an email from a friend of mine who asked me whether or not I thought it was better for her high school student to get what she called a dumb but paying job or a interesting non-paying internship. And I thought this was good because it's a good time of year to have this conversation. I have mixed feelings about this. I really do like getting paid. And I think that it's certainly for a high school student, very useful, essentially to be able to, you know, learn how to be an employee, work either in a company setting, or even if you just have a job as a wait staff, a bus boy, bus girl, working in retail, you learn about customer service and you learn probably some basic accounting and sales skills. I think that's pretty great. I also think when you earn money or when your kid earns money, it's a great opportunity for you to teach them about how to manage the money, maybe even open the first retirement account. So I think that I always err on the side of it's probably better to make some money. Now, that said, I know that internships are great because they do give you a chance to, or your kid a chance to, get access to a profession that maybe the kid thinks about, like, I'd love to be a doctor. Then the kid works in a hospital and is like, oh my God, that's the worst job ever. Or maybe it can help you focus on a possible college major. So both things are good. I'm going to err on the side of making money, though. Because, you know, it's Jill on Money, and that's what the show is about. If you've got a financial question, give us a holler, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.